Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are just trying to figure it out as they make their way through life and comedy and everything in between. I am Matt Alana Martin. With me, as always, is Dwight Simmons. Dwight, you're a little under the weather. You have a cough, you said, that you're dealing with?
Cough and a little bit of a fever, but we're powering through.
We're powering through, y'all. You buried the lead. You didn't say anything about the fever earlier in pre-roll.
I didn't want to panic you. I didn't want to get you panicked.
Yeah.
But now we're in the moment and you just got to react to it.
Well, I mean, I would have put like another cover on my microphone if I'd known that, you know, and my earphones, you know, I don't need to get no virus from you, the internet.
Why did we stop? Like when everyone first came back to shows after COVID, why did we stop the microphone condom, that little thing that you put on so you don't pass germs? Like we should have kept that around.
We should have kept that as much as that's also why people wonder why, like, you know, there's different mic techniques. And a very common one is people rest it on their chin, right? As a way that they just always know exactly where it is. People sometimes said that I keep the mic too far away from me, but I try to project and make up for it. I did that initially because if I have a mic super close to my mouth, it really picks up on my lisp. And if the PA is not great, then it's just a mess, right? But also, I'm socially distancing from that mic, man. I don't need your herpes shit on my mouth.
No.
You know, like, yeah, I'll just keep it all the way down here.
I've been relatively healthy like the last few months when everyone's getting sick. So hopefully this passes, but I decided to roll the dice and go to a Korean barbecue last Saturday. So it was delicious, but I got cocky.
Yeah.
Playing it. Got a little too close to the sun.
Were you sitting at a table with people you didn't know?
No, it was, cooking? I mean, okay. There were children and it was a big party.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. And, yeah. You know, no, it's definitely the kids
throwing stuff on the grill and it's just a lot of cross contamination.
Yeah.
And so I'm blaming it on that.
Okay. That's good. I like that instead of like blaming children, the natural disease carriers that they are, you're going to go like, no, it's them Koreans. It's those damn Koreans.
Everyone wants to talk about the China virus, but we never give any love to the Korean barbecue virus.
I know, exactly. What, just because they have boy bands that we love and dramas that we love?
Yeah, my Netflix queue is wild. We started a new Netflix, and I watched one anime, and now all of my suggestions are anime. And I'm going to watch them. I'm going to do it.
Okay.
I'm obsessed.
All right. What anime did you watch?
I watched Blue Eye Samurai.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Have you seen that?
Well, I don't need to. It's based on my life. So, you know. I feel like there are certain details they didn't get right. But.
I was thinking, like, this is Matt on the road trying to find his glory.
Exactly. It's like a parable. It's like a metaphor of my comedy journey is what it was. Also, before we go too much farther, if anyone's listening, maybe doesn't know, like I was just joking around about the Korean thing. My first wife was Korean. I lived in Korea. I got nothing but love for Koreans. So I was not going Trumpy. I was going sarcastic and jokey and trying to make my co-host look like a racist. So just so we can clear that up. You know?
So everybody knows I'm 100% serious.
Yeah.
I got a cold. And I'm after y'all.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sweetening it out.
There you go.
Anyway, how was your weekend?
I just don't want to get Shane Gillis up here. You know what I'm saying? Oh, man. My weekend comedy was, for the most part, really, 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 really great. Obviously, it started off by seeing your lovely face on Thursday night at the Bloomington Don't Tell.
Ooh,
we did
awesome.
At Full House Fitness, which is this really cool gym. The owner was super into the show. She actually sat right up front and was just dying and into everything. It was great. It was like you. It was Emily Davis. It was Stetson Banks and Anam Chowdhury. Great show, top to bottom. You know, there was a heavy, heavy rain during the show, which on a gymnasium metal roof created some background noise, but we got through it and, you know, everybody could hear everything. I am very glad I did go and borrow a second PA speaker. So, cause I was like, okay, so this is a gymnasium. It could get echoey. I don't want to so I'm so, so glad that I did that. And it's to the point that I'm thinking about just investing and getting a second one permanently.
Yeah.
Or my rig, my Don't Tell rig, just in case I'm going to ever need it again, I'll have it.
Yep.
So yeah, but I'm glad that I did that. So pat on my own back for that. But what did you think? You were headlining the show. You were a last minute headliner. Fill in Jasmine Ellis, who was going to be the secret headliner, got one of those Netflix auditions in Chicago. Very apologetic to me. I'm like, girl, go. What are you talking about? It's like, go. It's going to be fine. Like, but shout out to Jasmine. She was very lovely about the whole thing when she was like genuinely felt bad. And I'm like, yeah, just go.
She's good people. She's good people. Yeah. So it's just funny because I think she lives in LA, right? Mm-hmm. I know they're doing auditions out there. It's just funny to have them, like, she's coming to the Midwest
to do
from
it,
LA. Yeah. And then they're like, hey, also, can you do this audition?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, like, there's a couple different ways. You got a direct invite, but I've confirmed now from talking to a couple other people who got those, you know, like, they reached out to Curtis at the Laugh Factory. They reached out to Avery at Helium in Indianapolis. They reached out to some club owners, like, give us some suggestions, some recommendations.
Yeah.
And then people, you know, sent in clips. Yep. And then not everybody who sent in a clip got to do it, you know.
Right.
And I've been in that space, you know. That's often like how it works for opening for like a big famous comedian. You know, last time I went through this was like I got asked to submit to open for John Reap. They passed on me, went with somebody else, totally fine, you know. But yeah, so that's I don't know if Jasmine had submitted, or they were just like, oh, she's in town. If like Curtis or Avery or somebody who had that pull, it's like, you should get her while she's here. So
right.
Yeah, all the mysterious ways that it goes to just get crushed by my boy Dwight when he gets that spot instead of you. You know, I'm like saying, just there's so many different paths, so many different paths to that L that you're going to take, that giant L.
That giant L. Sorry you couldn't sweat it out with us in Chicago, Matt. It was, yes, it was tremendous. And I'm happy for Jasmine. And I was happy to fill in with her for her. Man, you book great don't tell lineups. Like, it's very impressive. I know Stetson was traveling in town. I hadn't seen Anam do a full set. And so funny.
Yeah.
So funny. And then obviously my homie M. Davis is just,
yeah, Emily's just a crusher. I mean, an absolute murderer in any room now. And you know, Emily, yes, she has the jokes and you know, does all that and works very hard. Like, Emily always has new stuff every time I see her. But Emily's also maybe the most likable comedian I've ever seen on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she just radiates likability and positivity. And yeah, but I did pull Anam aside at that show and just complimented her. Like, it's been so cool watching her go from a brand new baby comic, figuring out how am I going to talk about these things, like, you know, being a Muslim American, you know, in the Midwest, and like this identity, and you know, and just really honing in on her viewpoint and how to convey that to a room full of white people, usually, you know, in the Midwest. And really, yeah, I've been very impressed with Anam for sure. And it was great to see Stetson, man. I, most of the time, you know, we know Stetson as a producer. He puts on one of the best one-nighters in America at Black Apple, and he puts on a couple other things out there in Arkansas, but I've only ever seen him do that host role,
right,
or produce. And so to see him like come out and do 15 and just murder, it was just like, I mean, I knew he had it. I knew he was good. I could tell from his hosting stats he was good.
Yeah.
But just to see him come out and crush top to bottom, and that road rage bit that he has.
Oh my God.
It's so funny and such a big piece and so long.
It is like, it, like, we were talking about this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I like to do these long pieces, and it's not easy when you're trying to figure out how to structure it. So yes. He's like, he's had it for a minute, but trying to like get the confidence to actually dive in and then follow through on it.
Yeah.
Because it's a thing that we talk about where if they don't like the beginning of it, you're just in this bit for a very long time, and hopefully it pays off. And I haven't seen a bit done like that with that premise.
Yes.
So that's always very impressive to me. And I think that was great. But I agree, man. I hadn't seen him do like a, you know, showcase level set. And these kids, man, I mean, these kids, they keep you on your toes. That's for sure.
They do.
I was like, everybody's fucking crushing. This is amazing.
Yeah.
We're in a Cirque du Soleil gym training ground.
Uh-huh.
It's a massive I had no idea this place existed in Bloomington.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah, and shout out to Jenny Taylor, who hooked me up with the owner, Andrea. I basically just started thinking about, I need to find some new spots. And my buddy Jenny is a trainer there. So her Instagram has a lot of her working out and doing shit at that gym. Mm-hmm. And so I just like, do you think the owner of the gym would be into this? And she was like, hell yeah. And so when I met with Andrea, the owner of Full House Fitness, I went to go look at the space and kind of, I'm like, all right, I'm going to sell her on this thing. And I start to like, and she goes, oh, I've been to two of your don't tells already. I love them. I'm like, oh, I didn't need to come here then. Like, I know what a gym looks like. Well, good. Okay, cool. I'll see you next month when we do the show, I guess.
That's so funny.
But yeah, no, it was a great show. And then you crush, you know, I got home super late because the headliner would not get off stage, but.
That sounds right. That's accurate. Like, Matt, did you give me the light from stage?
Yeah.
Like, Matt, you give me the light. And you're like, Dwight, you know I gave you the light. Why are you up here asking?
Why you acting like it? Deniability, baby. It's all about deniability.
Plausible deniability.
But yeah, so that was a great start to my weekend. And then I was in Kansas City for two nights, and holy moly, man. I did a don't tell there. Yeah. Put on my Carlos. I'm sorry, Carlos, I've forgotten your last name off the top of my head, but they do an amazing job there. Apparently talking to him, they rotated a couple of spots, but one of their regular spots is Barrel of the Bottoms, which is a room that I've heard about forever. And so I headlined the Don't Tell there on Friday. And then Saturday, I headlined the advertised early show. They have an early and a late show. And the late show was some kind of premise type sketch. I don't know what it was, but I wasn't on it. Sold out Don't Tell show. It's really small, real intimate, just fire show, top to bottom. Everybody on the show was great. I had a hot one. The next night, almost sold out, still really, really strong, really good. I was talking to, there's two other comics that had been on the Friday night show with me as well. We were all like, if this had been the Friday night show, we'd be like, what an amazing show. But in comparison to the Friday night show, the one we had the night before, we're like, yeah, it's okay. Like, oh, man. That's how hot Friday night was.
Yep.
And then Saturday night, I was able to then jump on after my early show. I went to the North Side and jumped on a show at Rhino that is run by Aaron Scarborough and Ryan Tricky. They were nice enough to give me 10 at the end of the showcase. And that was also great. I mean, I got to tell you, I just think Kansas City comedy right now is in a very, very good place. You got great producers like Stephen Taylor and Carlos and Ryan Tricky and Aaron Scarborough out there doing really cool things. And to the point that it basically sold me on I'm going to submit for their festival for Fountain City.
Oh, dope.
Yeah, I had actually gotten in the very first year, but I couldn't do it for I can't remember now what the conflict was, but something came up and I had to drop out. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm just going to be like, well, this is going to be the priority now that weekend, whatever. I need to look that up. Hopefully I'm not already booked. But do you ever do that where you're like, you're hustling on your calendar and then you go to submit to a festival. You're like, I got a $500 weekend already booked. Like,
yeah, that
will pay my bills. So I guess I'm not submitting to that festival now.
No, I did it. I did it when I was submitting to a bunch of festivals and just lost track. I have forgotten that so speaking of Stetson, he does book stuff in Arkansas. I was trying to route my way to come do his shows, and the easy spot is St. Louis, where Flyover Festival was. So I was hitting up my contacts in St. Louis, and he's like, one of the guys that runs it, it's like, hey man, not supposed to tell you this yet, but you got into the festival that weekend. And I was like, I'm such an idiot.
Yeah.
So then I had to like call Stetson and cancel that weekend,
which he understands,
but that was like, it was such, I felt so, it's such a rookie mistake not to have your calendar organized in a way that you're like, all right, if I get this, usually you would
block it out,
which I typically do, but I think I got festival hungry and just
lost track,
and it happens. Thankfully it happened to a good dude.
He's not going to hold it. He's not going to hold it against you. Yeah. I do want to talk about my Sunday shows that I had too, real quick before we move on, because this is as good and amazing as Kansas City was. Omaha. I went to Omaha on Sunday and it was also solid, but it was one of those things where I had a show where I relearned a lesson that I've known for a long time, but I just needed to go through this again or whatever. We had a 5:30 show called Sunday Fun Day that Zach Peterson put on. I love Zach. He's a great producer. And you know, he's always like, we never know how this is. It's an early Sunday show. We had like 14 people. It's a ticketed paid show, 14 people in this bar. It was fine, but they were pretty tight. mm-hmm. you know, just more smilers and nodders, or sometimes just nodders, not even smiling.
Oh, damn.
But like the whole show had a solid opening lineup and it was real. And so I didn't break them. And I also just kind of like, I was tired. I was been on the road for a couple of days and not sleeping great. And so I just did not go in and do the job that I should have done. And I felt bad about it afterwards. Like I did the thing where I kind of was blaming them a little bit verbally, you know, for not being more on board with stuff. You know, you can do that kind of in a playful way, but yeah, so I didn't joke coy. I didn't be like,
you blame
I didn't
write anything.
Zach wrote all these jokes. I don't even know what you're talking about, but like it was okay. You know, and there's a couple who'd seen me in Omaha before at Tiny House Bar, and they came up to me and they bought a koozie and they were very complimentary. And then I felt even worse. I was like, oh shit, they know what I'm capable of.
Yeah.
And they saw me just do like a mess set. It was like and I was just like, I can't do that. I got to find that energy, step up, like be that conduit of joy that is my goal on stage.
Yeah.
Now, and then surprising, there's two lessons I learned, because then we Zach had asked me if I wanted to do a second show while I was there. It's a show called Quick Draw, and I was like, sure, second show is great. Didn't ask any questions. Zach also didn't ask any questions. So we get there and we find out that it's basically Kill Tony. It's a local version of Kill Tony, where they don't want us to go up and do stand-up. They want us to be on the panel.
Oh geez,
these two hosts. And so we get there, we're like, oh. And Zach, I think I'm not throwing Zach under the bus by saying this, but he has a very similar opinion of Kill Tony as I do, which is it's fucking terrible. Mm-hmm. Mostly because Tony Hinchcliffe is a horrific comedian. And so the entire premise that you're trying to impress a shitty comedian is flawed to begin with.
Right.
And also not a good dude. Let's start there too. So Zach and I are both like, let's just be positive. Let's just not be negative. Let's just do this, but do it in our own way. And you know, Addy, the host, and Clem, the co-host of the show, they, to their credit, they also weren't dunking on comics. They were very positive and reinforcing of comics.
Yeah.
And they had like a little interview section where they asked them like, how long have you been doing it? You know, it was very much like, I'm surprised that they're not getting a cease and desist from Kill Tony, honestly. But it
straight up ripped the format.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly even the questions during the interviews are pretty much the same, you know, like what's your biggest fear and things like that. And so I don't know if it would have been as fun if I had not had Zach to my right, but me and Zach, we didn't take over the show, but we just took it upon ourselves to be like Steph Curry out there.
Yeah.
Like when it was our turn to like, when there was like a moment and maybe a lull or like something, we would just try to fire that one joke.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I think both of us were pretty, we had a high percentage rate of hitting and big laughs from the audience. And I kind of softly dunked jokingly on one of the comics, but this was after I had, you know, complimented them. And, you know, the thing is, I think almost every single comic who went up had been doing it less than a year.
Oh, geez.
And so it makes me wonder if, like, is there something about like that format where comics have been doing it for a while? Like, yeah, I don't want to go do a 2-minute set.
Right.
And then have these, and then, you know, because to be fair, like very few comics did well in the room.
Yeah.
Like, and none of them, they all had kind of the same energy of like, okay, well, this was just some ideas I had. There were a couple. There were a couple that had solid sets, I would say. But it was just a very interesting thing to be there. But that was the second lesson that I knew already that I needed to teach myself again, which is to, you know, not automatically say no to things. Like, had they told me it's our version of Kill Tony, I'm like, I'm just going to get on the road and start heading home. Then, you know, I'm not going to go do that thing. But it turned out to be a lot of fun.
You don't... You don't know. I mean, you got to protect yourself sometimes. You don't know that it's going. Yeah. You don't know the hosts. You just know that you're going with Zach. You don't really know what their intentions are of the show. So I understand not or saying no to something.
Right. Yes.
That's just a replica of a thing that you really don't appreciate or respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to do roasts. I'm not, every time I get asked to do a roast, I'm going to say no.
Right.
Unless it's like one of those Disney roasts that are super silly.
Like a character, character roast. Yeah. But see, I did do a roast as part of the same thing of like me trying to be more open. And I did fine. But same thing. I was like, I don't love this.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I need this $50 this bad. You know?
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think you're right. I think at our ages and as long as we've been doing comedy, we definitely know ourselves better and what we are comfortable doing and not doing.
Yeah.
But I was just pleasantly surprised. And I will say, if the hosts had been complete shitbags and super, you know, misogynistic and racist and kind of like, there are a lot of opportunities for them to, you know, there were black comics and there were women comics. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of chances for them to do any of those things, and they didn't do any of that. And I don't think that's who they are.
Yeah.
You know, I would have just turned against them on the show.
Right.
Or just left, you know, like, the fuck I care about your YouTube thing. You're
done. Yeah. This is funny, man. Sometimes we just got to take the W's. I know it worked out, but you had a great weekend of shows.
Yeah, I did.
And then we're always like, let's push it to the limit and go do an open mic. And then
that's
the last thing you do before you decide to drive home.
Yes.
And you're like, it ruins the entire weekend.
Yes. Never go do. Yes. If there's one thing anyone should take from this podcast, is if you have a really great set, just take it. Do not go. Don't go jump on another show and do another set afterwards, particularly if it's a bad open mic. If it's a bucket mic, but we'll get you on. We'll guarantee you get you on. Uh-huh. It's like, no, man.
No,
like the
it.
Only way I'll go do that other show, like the Rhino show, was a showcase.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and I knew that like Steven Taylor was on. I knew like they had like real comics on it. I was like, oh, okay, it's going to be good, you know.
Yeah.
So but yeah, that we both made that mistake of like, I'm hot.
Yeah, I'm
and then you go fucking bomb your ass off for 5 minutes. You're like, yep, you're like,
oh shit, I thought I could do this. This feeling lasts forever. What do you eat when you're in Kansas City? You're eating less meat nowadays.
Well, I mean, I did have barbecue. I met up with Steven.
That's where you go get it.
Yeah.
I love
it was solid. Yeah. And we went to Joe's. And also, there was a comic from Chicago that was in Kansas City that was on my two Barrel of the Bottom shows named Alex Lamb. He was doing literally a barbecue tour of Kansas City. He'd been there for a couple of days. And each day he was going to a different one.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had not been to Joe's yet, which is a super famous one in KC. It's like the one that Bourdain said was like the real deal.
Yeah.
And so that was great. We had a comics lunch, the three of us. Steven and Andrew had never met. I had only met Andrew the night before. So it was just cool, like, you know, comedy talk and barbecue talk and just chilling. And it was great. Joe's is definitely, I recommend it. I got a pound of burnt ends to bring home with me, and we had it for dinner last night.
Oh, damn, dude. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Does your producer smell like the inside of a smoker?
I wish. No, it's like, no, they packaged it up real good. Like, it was real.
Okay.
Like, yeah, they're not. They asked me even if I wanted it frozen. Like, do you want it hot or you want it frozen? And I didn't get it frozen. I probably should have. But
yeah.
But it's good. Anything in there? Yeah.
That's awesome. A barbecue tour set like made my insides cringe. Like eating barbecue.
Well, you're
days
still.
In a row.
I was gonna say you're sick from the Korean barbecue right now, so maybe it would sound better.
Was so good.
It was Andrew. Worth it. Andrew did talk about like how, because he's like 30 and he's like, I'm getting at the age. It's like, I can't really do this anymore. He's like, he's like, eating this much meat every day in a row is starting to take a toll. And I'm like, oh yeah, dude. I was like, this will be like the one time this month I have this much meat. Are you kidding me? Like,
yeah.
So for sure. What about you? What did you do last weekend?
Oh, so last week I mentioned that we had the full week off. I say we, mm-hmm. Me mm-hmm. and Megan. It ended up doing your show last minute.
Yes,
that Thursday. And it was so fun. I really enjoy the don't tells because I've said it before, but it takes the pressure off of everything. It takes the pressure off of like trying out new bits. And especially when the lineup's good before you.
Yeah.
You don't feel like you have to do like all this heavy lifting to get them back. And so shout out to you again. You do a great job.
Thank you.
And then, yeah, man, I've been, so the last couple of days have been up and down on my writing, like making sure that I do my writing in the morning. I missed a couple days. So I've been trying to be better about doing that on a daily basis. And I missed today because I felt like crap, but these are all excuses. So I leave for the West End Comedy Festival tomorrow. That's Friday and Saturday. I'm stopping in to do Sweetwater, Joe Pettis' show. Mm-hmm. So I think when I'm on the road, it's easier for me to do the pages. It's just wake up in a strange place and then you're just there.
Yeah.
You're like in a comedy condo or in like a hotel just have the notebook right there, just wake up and knock them out before you get the day started, before I check my phone or anything. So I'm
Yeah,
trying to
for
get
sure.
back to doing that, but
It's good.
I'm excited about this festival because Megan's coming with me on this one.
Nice.
We love Atlanta, so I will be getting some homegrown, maybe a comfy biscuit or two.
Two, Jesus Christ. Now you're talking about not eating barbecue for 5 days, but man, one comfy biscuit should be enough to hold you over for a week. What are you doing?
They're so good.
They are amazing.
I showed my father-in-law some pictures of the last comfy biscuit, and he was like, "Oh, damn. Yeah, that looks good." And it's like, "Yes, it does." Atlanta's one of my favorite cities, so.
You remember when we met up with Scott Eason and Elliot White there,
Yeah.
and we got up because when you're in Atlanta, people don't know Homegrown is a restaurant and it's amazing, and the Comfy Chicken is their signature dish, and it's a chicken biscuit gravy, like amazing. It's amazing. But we all got the Comfy Chicken. And then also me and you sitting across from Scott and Elliot, we look like we're them from the future. We look like an older version of them. Like we synced up so perfectly. Scott also has
So
like a
funny.
beard and every and like, you know, like it was just like, oh, it's just like a weird time mirror between the two of us. It almost like this is what eating comfy chicken will do to you, boys. Get out now.
That's so funny. Yeah, it's like what could you say to yourself? Your 25-year-old self is what it felt like.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But
That's a good question. What would you say to your 25-year-old self, Dwight?
I didn't stay in school.
Okay.
Stay in
Did
school.
you not finish school? You finished school.
I
Oh.
did, but my degree, both of my degrees were required more more schooling to do.
Yeah.
But no, honestly, I love doing stand up. I wish one of my biggest regrets is not taking it seriously from the beginning.
Yeah.
I do feel like I missed out on a lot of opportunities when I was single or like didn't have a ton of responsibility where I could have just been playing around with stand up,
Period.
playing
Playing
with
around,
jokes,
period. Yeah.
playing around. But like kind of, honing.
Yeah.
Starting earlier, I guess, but
Yeah.
I was really a hobbyist until I don't know, 27, 28. So
Yeah.
I wish I would have taken it seriously from a younger age.
Yeah. Solid. I think that I since I didn't even start till I was 35. I think if I could talk to 25-year-old me, I'd be like, hey, maybe you should try comedy. But at that point, I was still living in Evansville, Indiana, which didn't have a comedy club or comedy scene at all. Like stand-up just did not exist there. And so I would have had to move or whatever. That'd be the other thing. I would, like I talked to 17-year-old me, it's like, you don't really need to go to Evansville, Indiana. It's you can go one of those big cities, you'll be fine. Get out there.
What you need to do is invest in a little company called Apple,
Yes,
called
exactly.
Macintosh, and
Yep. How old do you think I was when I was 17? Do you think Apple had not come out yet, Dwight?
It was
All
like, wasn't it
right. Here's the
like
Sports Almanac. You're going to bet on the
Oh,
1957 Super Bowl.
it
No.
like, no, because it was like Macintosh first and then Apple was later.
Yes, it was, but they had already been around for a minute. Yeah, it was like pre-iPhone and pre like iPod, so I would have gotten in. This is my favorite like dumb like little factoid. The drummer of Black Flag, this infamous punk rock band from LA that Henry Rollins got his start in and everything, you know, just like punk as fuck, as punk as punk can possibly be. Well, the drummer was also like kind of a hobbyist computer nerd. And so he bought Apple stock like literally the first day.
Oh.
And that dude is the wealthiest member of Black Flag now.
Yeah, I would
Like
imagine so.
many times over, because he just got in like literally when shares were nothing and then
Oh my
just
God.
rode the entire explosion of it. Yeah.
I love those stories. That's
Yeah.
like when Magic Johnson went with Converse over Nike.
Yeah.
He would have been like the first Nike stockholder, and they said
Yeah.
he would have been worth like $22 billion today. Isn't that
Yeah,
crazy?
That is crazy.
Yeah, yep. He's not. I think he's still very, very wealthy. He's doing okay.
I think he's doing okay. I really thought you were gonna say that's kind of like when Magic Johnson got in on the ground floor of AIDS, and you know, he was right there at the beginning of it. And
he was an early adopter.
Early adopter. So those were our past weekends. You got this big weekend coming up in Atlanta, the West End Comedy Festival. How many shows are you doing in that festival?
I'm doing two shows in the festival, so it's just a 2-day festival, Friday and Saturday. I'm going to try to go to as many other shows as possible. I think they did a pretty good job of staggering, and everything's walkable. So
awesome.
And like I said, I'm going early, a day early, just so I can be in the city. And also I love doing any show that Joe Pettis is, involved with. He's a fantastic producer. He's who I credit as the person that made comedy and breweries popular in America. Everybody does it now, but it used to just be Joe's show. It's Sweetwater Brewing, beer and comedy, very simple name. Mm-hmm. Now everybody does it. So
yeah, it definitely was ahead of the curve on that. And he is a great producer and great comic too. Yeah.
Yeah. So Ian A. Bear asked me to do a spot at the Laughing Skull, but it's about 35 minutes away from where the festival is. So I just can't pull it off. But that's also another great producer. I love Atlanta. The pay isn't always great when you're going to do spots. You're just doing spot pays, so you hope you can accumulate a bunch of them together. But just I think it's re-energizing to be in a city that is hungry. I still consider Atlanta a hungry comedy city, where everybody's so good. And also I don't know, it's just very, I'm always envious of that scene when I go and when I leave. So it's got that little inspiration bump. It's nice. I can take these little nuggets of what these producers are doing and use them on my shows.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is they are those doing everything right. Atlanta does have that thing where comics get paid. You at least get spot pay. Mm-hmm. And there's many, many scenes out there that aren't doing that, or they're criminally underpaying, we all try to fight it the best we can. People that are on the right side of things, Thursday we got into points, essentially, basically for doing Don't Tell, you get a producer pay. That's a flat pay. And then you get more, if more people come, you sell more tickets, you get more money. And we got into points. And so I just split that up with you guys, the comics, because you all helped, fill this place up, you guys did the work, So I'm also always trying to pay it forward like that. And I think that Atlanta does it pretty well. It's not as good as Colorado, the gold standard of independent shows.
Right.
You can go to Colorado, just do bar shows and come home with money in your pocket after your expenses. That's just unbelievable.
I think that's one of the only cities you can do that in.
Right. Yeah. But Atlanta's solid. Atlanta, I've never not at least broken even if I'm just doing spots, 10-minute, 15-minute spots. It still works out. So hell yeah to all the Atlanta producers. This is actually something I had been thinking about for a while. Good comedians are good show producers. It's very rare. There are some instances of it where a comic is not a great comic, but they're a great producer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very rare comparatively, because usually a good comedian, when you think of the very best independent producers, right, you think of Joe Pettis, you think of David Rodriguez before he opened the club. The reason that the Comedy Fort exists is because he created this monster of a comedy scene in Fort Collins just by putting on independent shows.
Right.
You think of, God, so many really all across the country. Stetson, perfect example. Stetson, great comic. I think the parallel on this is that they take this shit seriously, both in their material and also what they're putting on. It's they have the same muscle that I think we have, which is they would be embarrassed if the show was bad, even if they weren't on it.
Yeah.
They would take it personally and feel bad. And it's the same thing that, it's just how I felt about that Sunday show that I did for Zach. Zach is another fantastic comedian that's a great show producer in Omaha. And I felt I let him down as a performer. And then he felt he let me down because there were only 14 people there. Just two Midwest dudes apologizing to each other for the next 2 hours.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. But
oh, sorry about that set.
Yeah. And so there are some, you know, we definitely know there's some producers at half asset or just don't give a shit if the show's good or bad because they've already structured it in a way that they're going to get paid, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's I don't know what my point of this is. Just saying, I think there's a parallel there in most cases. And so if a show is banging and regularly banging,
yeah,
you can pretty much trust that the guy running or girl or non-binary person running the show mm-hmm. is also very good at comedy.
Right.
Even and it's also a thing where you have to just take that stab because they're also not putting themselves on the show every time because they're right. not using the they're not booking themselves a headline. You know.
Yeah.
And then like getting a little banner that says headliner and posing underneath it and putting it on their Instagram. You know.
This feels specific.
No, I'm just kind of like pulling things from the ethos, you know. So anyway, nothing but love. A big shout out to the comedians are doing double the work. You're a good example of this too. Like I came and did your brewery show and you were apologizing to me. I was like, dude, this is great. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like the show's been good. Like this is such a good show, good space, good people. But you, of course, you're like, it could be more people.
I always have producer guilt. Yeah. Like no matter what.
Yeah.
Could have been 200 people in there and I would have been upset about the lighting or the sound.
But anyway, that's what makes you a great comic is because you're never satisfied and you'll never be happy. So at least you have that to look forward to.
I'm glad I'm dead.
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. That was one of the things I wanted to talk about is
wait. Plug your shows and then we'll go.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So my upcoming shows, this Saturday, I'll be back at Helltown at the Comet Bar. Speaking of great comedians who are great producers, holy shit. Wayne Mehmet, what he's built in Cincinnati is a beautiful thing. So for Bombs Away Comedy, his company, I'll be doing two shows, early and late show at the Comet Bar this Saturday in Cincinnati, Ohio. Those tickets are on sale right now. The following weekend, speaking of Evansville, I'll be back down in Newburgh, Indiana, which is like a wealthy little suburb of Evansville. I'll be there on Saturday the 10th at Jennings Station. They're billing it as a Valentine's Day show, mm-hmm. and yet they just have three dudes on it. So,
bro love, man.
Bro love. It's just a real circle jerk of a Valentine's Day show. Come on out and hear us talk about our weird balls, everybody.
Yeah.
I don't have any jokes about that, but
take my wife, please.
Yeah. But those tickets are also on sale and it's always nice to go back and see old friends when I'm there. And then those tickets are available on my website, madelanomartincomedy.com. Every one of those words has a hyphen in between it, except for comedy and com, in which there is a dot. Dwight, what you got to plug other than West End? Let's go ahead and talk about your next weekend after that as well.
Next weekend, it's a off week. And then the week of Valentine's Day, I have a show at Sycamore Saloon near Nashville, Indiana. Mm-hmm. That's Valentine's Day.
Nice.
And then the 16th, Friday the 16th, I will be in Stevensville, Michigan, doing just another Michigan show. They love me there. I've done so many Michigan shows already this year. And I am starting to turn a new leaf.
Okay, there you Michigan. Go. There you go. So here's what happened is you negged your way into a bunch of Michigan mm-hmm. dates. They're like, why does he like us? Let's give us another chance, baby.
It's Midwest niceties.
We'll give you $200 and no hotel. Come on, baby.
Come on now. Maybe a hotel. But yeah, all of that info is up on my website, DwightSimmons.com.
Right on. So speaking of I'm glad I'm dead, we have an update on the ongoing story about the AI George Carlin special that was released by Dudezy. And then I want to make sure that I get this guy's name right. But Kelly Carlin, George Carlin's daughter, filed a lawsuit against the creator of the special, right?
Yep.
And in discovery, which is the thing that happens when you file lawsuits, shit starts to come out. It turns out that Chad Kultgen, who is the co-host of Dudezy with Will Sasso, actually wrote the special.
Yep.
The AI, the only thing that's AI is the George Carlin voice. It sampled his voice from all his existing specials and created like a mishmash. And so to my opinion, because AI law is very murky, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's the whole thing that the Hollywood actor strike was about, or one of them was like, hey, we don't want you to be able to just use AI to make fake versions of us forever, right. You know. Someone just straight up profiting from someone's public persona is very cut and dry.
Yep.
Law. And mm-hmm. so I hope this Chad dude, and fuck Will Sasso too, if he's part of this, like, I hope that they get sued into oblivion for this bullshit. Like, what were you thinking? What were you doing? And also, like, oh, it's the AI did it.
Right.
Oh, this is like a tribute thing. Nah, dog. You're trying to, you're being deceptive up top by saying it like AI did this.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, you're trying to like, nah, like just fuck off.
I don't understand why they thought it was so cool that AI, like, they're caping for AI.
Yes.
Or they're, excuse me, they're on like AI's payroll.
Yeah, exactly.
It's wild. It doesn't make any sense. And to sit down and write an entire special in another comedian's voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, like present it in a way that's just complete bullshit.
Yeah.
Like it had everyone kind of shook. It's like anybody could do this. If this is what machine learning is going to be.
Right. I think you nailed it too. Also, it does seem like just a giant, it seemed like a giant commercial for AI, for some sort of AI specific program or something like that. But then it's all fake. It's all a bunch of dog shit.
Yeah.
So,
what, like, there are better ways to use your time.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are better. I cannot see them not making an example out of this podcast. Like, yeah. if lawmakers are starting to be more and more concerned about AI capability, I don't see mm-hmm. how this isn't like, all right, what you guys did was bullshit. It was lying. And also, you can't use another comic's likeness or another human being's likeness.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same way that, like, you know, if someone you think about like the like Las Vegas tribute acts, right? Like mm-hmm. or Branson or wherever, you know, Atlantic City. It's like, oh, it's a person pretending to be Tina Turner, right? Mm-hmm. And doing Tina Turner songs. Tina Turner's estate signs off on that shit. If they don't sign off on that shit is not legal. You know, mm-hmm. somebody goes out and does a tribute act, like they have to get permission for that right. shit. And so them to do this, and with the owner and the holder of the Carlin estate, Kelly Carlin, saying, nah, like they're fucked. Like,
yeah, I didn't give them permission to use my dad's likeness.
Yeah.
And like, you think they blamed it on the AI because it's like the dog ate my homework. Like if it's shitty. Then,
yeah.
The computer did it.
Yeah, exactly. The jokes were like mid, like they're like, yeah. Oh, well, that's just the jokes. And now we're finding out it's just this dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to Nate Beckman, listener of the podcast. He's the one who turned me on to this development of the story. He sent me a link. So thank you, Nate, for keeping us up to date on that.
That is wild, man. What a dumb way to I don't know. What a dumb way to not go, that they're gonna get canceled.
Yeah.
But like, what a dumb way to use your platform.
It's, man. Well,
I just don't understand.
Yeah. Apparently the idea with this podcast is there is a third co-host, which is an AI. And so what's also come out now is the fact that this Chad dude has been writing all of the third fake co-host's lines.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing has been bullshit this entire time. They were running it through a robot voice.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just dumb. Dumb shit.
Do people... They buy into it, though, like listeners of that podcast must.
I had never heard of this fucking thing until this George Carlin thing. So I can know everything. But I mean, Will Sasso, obviously a big name, is on Mad TV and mm-hmm. like is a character actor that shows up and stuff all the time, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. Just wild, wild shit.
Don't love it.
While we're talking about stuff that we don't love and we got a little bit more time, this is something that we have sort of flirted with talking about on the podcast, and I think we should probably get into it. Let's talk about premise theft, the murky mm-hmm. gray area that is premise theft. And everyone knows what joke theft is, most notably, of course, you know, Carlos Mencia getting publicly called out for joke theft a while ago. And, you know, he's still touring. He's still playing clubs. So
turns out the only people that give a shit are other comedians.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the same thing like us complaining about like TikTok stars that have no act and aren't funny, like, selling out clubs. Like, yeah, the general public does not care.
Damn.
They don't give a shit. Yeah. So I just want to say, get out there, steal those bits, everybody. just take credit for it. Don't blame it on an AI. That's what I'm saying. Don't blame it on AI.
Smart thing. Yeah.
Yeah. There has been a recent case of this sort of going on, and we talked off camera, and a few other comics and I have talked about this too, about comedians. And there's, I can think of two distinct comedians in the Midwest who are doing this, and not constantly, but they've each done it a couple times, where the thing with premise theft is if someone has an observational joke about something, and something very specific and unique. I'm not saying Trump jokes. We all took a shot at Trump. People take shots at Biden, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Or Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce? What the fucking football game?
Travis Kelce.
I got there. Anyway.
Yeah. Would you say, did you say Taylor Travis?
Kelce Taylor. Kelce. I thought she's making him change his name so that when she gets married, she'll be Taylor.
You went full Chris Tucker in the outtakes of Rush Hour 2.
That is such a specific thing, and I know exactly what you're talking about. Oh my God.
Who do you think you kidnapped? Kelce Clinton?
What's her name? Chelsea Bush? You think you kidnapped Chelsea Bush?
Kelce.
But I'm not talking about that kind of stuff. We're the things that are super topical that everyone's going to take a bite at the apple. We see that all the time with Twitter and like the monologue jokes, you know, for late night. There's a lot of very similar takes on that kind of shit. But if someone has a very specific, unique take, or they're talking about something that like not everyone else is talking about, they've picked a random thing. Like, let's say I'm going to use this as an example because it's not an example that's been stolen, but like the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like some bizarre historical thing, and someone writes a couple minute long bit on it. And then a week or two, or even a month later, someone from their scene or a sister scene that, you know, all of a sudden also has a joke about the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Now they mm-hmm. took it in a different direction. They wrote their own punchlines.
Yeah.
But it's like, huh, I wonder where you got the idea and the inspiration for that. Where did that come from?
That came to you mighty quick.
Yeah.
After you saw I posted that on social media.
Yeah. And so it's a gray area because, yes, technically they put their own spin on it, and that the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald does not belong to anyone. It is a public domain. It's a thing that happened. Anybody can write about it, but it's still shitty. And your comics in your local scene are still going to talk about it behind your back.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not a good look. And particularly if you do it more than once, which these people that I'm thinking of, the two individuals I'm thinking of, have done it more than once.
Mm-hmm.
And if another comic can just immediately go, oh, that's crazy, because that's just like so-and-so's bit that they did at the open mic last month that you were also on, that open mic and lineup that you were also on. Try to be more original. Try to be more inspired, everybody out there. Don't look to the other comics in your scene for inspiration. I mean, inspiration, yes, on the grind and the hustle and like, oh shit, they're so funny, I got to be funny. But as far as like material and what they're talking about, now, obviously, you have jokes about being in an interracial marriage. I have jokes about being in an interracial marriage. That shit is our real lives. These are things that we're experiencing. These are not plucked from like the muses' observational stuff.
Right.
If it's your real life, yeah, man. If you are also adopted and you have jokes about growing up adopted, and another comic in your scene has jokes about being adopted, fair game. You have your own experiences. Take your own take on it. But again, if it's something very specifically comedically, mm-hmm. like, I made this thing into this thing, and then you come along and you just do your version of it, that's shit's weak sauce, big time.
I, you know, obviously agree with you on this. It's a couple things I think that, you know, comics that I'm thinking of that do this are just so comedy obsessed that they don't have, it's hard for them to get perspective outside of stand up. Like, this is the all encompassing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we're like, you have to live a life to have unique experiences in your own life. If your life is just going to open mics and watching YouTube stand up and watching reels and watching stand-up all the time, you're naturally going to start to pick up on other people's premises.
Yeah.
And it's not it's a very, very unhealthy habit. It's definitely something you should be aware of. And I think people will eventually call you out or eventually stop booking you. And that's the big thing. Secondly, it's don't be so reliant on one premise that you can't move on from it. Like, you can always write more. You can always write more stuff. Like, if you see stuff, if you see someone working the same premise as you and it's just like too similar, I'm okay with like going to that person being like, hey, you know, this is pretty similar to what I was working on.
Yeah.
I'm fine leaving it. Or if I mean, that's a judgment call. Like, or if I'm like super into working that bit, it's like, hey, I'm going to take it in this direction, just making sure that we're not overlapping here.
Yes, I think you can address it. It depends on the comic and your relationship with them. You know, I'll just share this. Like, Derek Sheen and I have almost the exact same opening joke talking about our mothers dying. Mm-hmm. He has a big chunk about dealing with the death of his mother. And we have, it's phrased slightly different, but it's essentially the same joke. And I messaged, I was like, yo, it's crazy. I have this exact same joke. And we immediately go in different directions after that opening quick joke. And then we were just like, fuck it, let's both keep doing it. Because it's such a quick, easy, like, it's a one-liner, essentially, to open it up. And we're both like, I don't care if you do it.
Right.
Like, so, but, what you don't want to do is you don't want to, like, you know, send threatening emails or all that shit that happened just in the Indianapolis scene for a while, which was wild.
I think
you nailed it. If someone has a similar premise... The reason I brought it up is I think these people that I'm thinking of did it knowingly. It's not like, I'm also writing a thing on that. Because if it's like that, if you they had no actual knowledge of it and then you're both on the same show, you're like, oh, that's crazy. I have the same bit more or less. You can figure out whether or not to go on. Or you can talk to the other comic. I mean, I remember being in Portland, Oregon, and I'm in the green room talking with a comic who I did not know from LA who was also on the show. And we're just talking shop. We're just talking about shit. And I wish I could give credit to this comic, but I was talking about, like, I was like, yeah, I'm trying to figure out a thing. I want to talk about, like, this idea of, because one had just gotten, you know, in trouble again, of, like, the Republican senator or congressman who's been always been very anti-LGBTQ gets caught, you know, in a bathhouse or whatever, right? Yep. I was like, I'm trying to figure out how to write about that and about this idea that people automatically, anytime there is someone who is, like, vehemently anti-gay, the course of the easy thing is like, oh, they're probably secretly gay, they're like self-hating gay, right?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm trying to write about that. And she's like, you know, there's a comic in LA who's doing this joke now, and I wish I knew who this was, I can credit it because it's brilliant, but they were like, same setup, you know, they talk about that. He's like, but that's crazy because nobody goes to a Klan meeting and goes, I bet they're secretly black.
Yeah, that's funny.
It's like, you know, this, I mean, that's, it's like funny. A brilliant way to parallel. It's like, nope, sometimes people are just pieces of shit,
right?
You know. And so this comic from Portland or from LA told me that in the green room. I was like, oh, then I'm not doing my bit.
Right.
That person got it. They nailed it.
Yep.
And so you got to be ready to walk away, like you said, because you can always write more. Even if someone just completely takes your joke, you know, all the way through, you're like, well, I'll just write more.
Yep.
So, yeah. So I don't know. It just, we just had a recent case of this where premise theft or I don't know if the stuff is the right idea of like just tagging along. I don't know what you want to call it, but
the premise lift.
Yeah, premise, like, Mad Libs. You know,
yeah, that would actually go better in my set if that thought. Then maybe people would like me too.
Yeah, and so one of those things. And so don't do it, everybody. And if you know somebody who is doing it, I don't know, maybe have the courage to call them out. I did talk to one comic about one instance of it. I'm just like, you know, so-and-so has that joke.
Right.
Like, yes, you've changed the details, but it's basically that joke. And that person's like, oh, I didn't know that. And that person is still doing the joke. And so it's like, all right, I try to let them know.
Yeah. That's I think I texted you a couple of weeks ago. I was working on like the act out for my mom praying in public. And I was like, this one part feels familiar. I could not place it. So I texted like four people. I was like, hey, have you ever seen anyone like do an act out or like anything like this similar? And you said you had seen something like that. And I was like, all right. And then that part's out. That's all I need.
Yeah.
And then because you can always work around it. It doesn't have to be so pivotal to the thing. Like Think about that in like every aspect. And then
you wrote a stronger version of it.
Yeah.
You then turn around and you're still doing an act out of your mom praying, but now it's like three times stronger than the original idea was.
Right. Because it was like the first thing.
Yeah. And so, I did the same thing. Like I have had jokes come to me that just seem too familiar or too obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I will Google search, or I'll text like you or Brent or somebody else that I know that's been around the block and has done shows in many, many different scenes. Yeah. That's the other thing is a lot of people, if they never leave their scene, they think they're being super original because they're the only comic in that scene talking about that. It's like, you have no idea. Like this, every scene has a guy doing that exact joke, you know? And so, like this idea of doing research, you know, it's like Paul McCartney said about the song Yesterday. He woke up with the song Yesterday fully formed in his brain, and he was convinced for years that he stole it.
Yeah.
Like he tried to figure, which back then it was pre-internet, but he was like, he tried to ask people, he's like, do you know this melody? This melody seems like, you know, and everybody's like, no, you know? And so, you should be like that. You should be trying to make sure that you're not unintentionally lifting stuff, and you should definitely not be intentionally lifting stuff like the people that I'm referring to in this entire segment. They clearly know what they're doing.
Yep. They do. I mean, this is a thing, I've said it before, but if you're worried about being a hack, you're probably on the right track. You're probably not.
Yeah.
You're probably taking the steps not to do that.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, because like we said earlier, nobody cares about the stuff from us. So except for us and maybe some Reddit bros that have strong opinions. But
yeah,
it's self-policing, and it's you got to have some integrity when you're writing bits. It's just wild to do it in such close proximity to your own scene.
Exactly. Steal a bit from somebody you don't know from TikTok or some shit. Like, why are you stealing from somebody that does the same shows as you?
Yeah, that's you nuts. Know? It's that's the level of like Carlos Mencia stealing Bill Cosby's closer. It's like, you don't think people know where that came from? You're doing the chocolate cake bit?
Carlos has been raping people? I didn't know that. No.
Charging staff $25 for selfies. So,
oh my god, what a
call it what you will.
Yeah, but anyway, so that's just something that we've been thinking about and wanting to talk about, and we finally have time. If you want to give us topics to talk about, you can always email us at the podcast at mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight @gmail.com. We'd love to get your questions and give our takes on whatever comedy related thing that you have. I want to say if there was something else I wanted to put in here before we wrapped up. You got something else?
I think we should do a booking best practices soon. I've been getting a lot of messages about like how to get booked more. And I feel like maybe we talk about it a bit, but
get funnier.
But yeah, it's, you know, even if it's just to reiterate,
sure.
Maybe dedicate a whole episode to getting booked more, but
yeah, we could do that.
You know,
it could be, that could I be an know. Annual episode that we
an
do
annual,
every year we do the booking
the
episode.
Hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember the one thing I wanted to talk about is that, the submission fee for Limestone goes up on February 11th. So if you've been thinking about submitting, the whole reason that we have a submission fee increase price thing is so that not everyone waits until the last minute to submit. We all know, and we've talked about on this podcast before, how hard it is to get good tape. And so sometimes you're endlessly chasing that perfect submission tape. Shit or get off the pot. If you want to save $15, it's going to be $25 until midnight on February 11th. And then after that, it goes up to $40. And again, we don't want a single person to submit at $40. The design of this, we should really have it go from $25 to $100. Like the whole idea is to make sure the review panel has time to watch them in small 50 submissions clumps, and not all of a sudden like, well, here's 400.
Right.
Good luck at the very end of the process. So save yourself some dough, save yourself some grumbling and grief from the panel. Like, this motherfucker submitting on the last day. Get those submissions in before the 11th. Good luck if you do. If you do submit, good luck. As always, Dwight and I don't have much to do with who gets picked. It's all the review panel. So don't be mad at us.
Stop slyly in the green room being like, I'm thinking about submitting this year.
Yeah. Yep.
Sounds good, man.
Yep. Nothing like that to make everything super awkward every time that you're in the green room, like, oh, okay. I will say this weekend in Kansas City, no one had that energy. I don't think anybody there even really knew that I am involved with Limestone. But I had definitely had a lot of comics, like, really, and Omaha, the same thing. Like, tell me, like, even comics that weren't on the show were like, oh, it's so good. I'm so glad I finally get to see you. Like, people, like, seem to, like, know who I am or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, like, this sort of, like, elder of the scene, like, respect thing.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. I hated it a lot less than when the staff at Summit City kept calling me sir. Like, when they're like coming into the green room, it's like, and I was like, I know you don't call off every comic sir. This is because I'm old. I get it. All right, everybody. Until next week. This is Matt and Dwight Just Might. Thank you so much for listening. Dwight was talking before we started rolling about how our numbers are up, and that is a very cool thing. If you want to help keep that trend swinging upward, tell your friends about it, rate and review, all that kind of good stuff, you know, share the link to people if you're into it. We appreciate you.